The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton for the stay.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. It is Halloween tomorrow, the day we celebrate the scary and the creepy right on our doorsteps. Few know creepy like R.L. Stine, creator of the Fear Street series, horror books for teens of Mostly Ghostly, The Nightmare Room, and of course, Goosebumps. The scary, funny books for younger kids that became huge in the 1990s and just keep going. Goosebumps just hit the big screen as a feature film with Jack Black playing R.L. Stine. This hour on Point, Halloween and the spooky mind of R.L. Stine. He's with us. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Did you read Goosebumps? And are you headed for the movie this Halloween weekend? What's your question for R.L. Stine? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. In the new movie, a lot of the monsters that R.L. Stine has created in his many, many, many Goosebumps movies get together, get out of the books, come to life. Here's a scene where Slappy the Dummy, the ventriloquist dummy and villain from the Night of the Living Dummy Goosebumps saga, rallies the rest of R.L. Stine's monsters after they've escaped from their books.
All my friends in one place! I've never been so happy! I don't want this day to end! And it doesn't have to! As long as we get rid of Stine!
All right, and off they go. And here's Jack Black playing R.L. Stine, explaining something about his books and why they're so dangerous. Right after here, the Abominable Snowman is accidentally released from the R.L. Stine book, The Abominable Snowman of Pasadena.
When I was younger, I created my own friends. Monsters. Demons. To terrorize my neighborhood and all the kids that made fun of me. And they became real to me. And then one day, they actually became real. My monsters literally leapt off the page. As long as the books remain locked, we're safe. But when they open, well, you've just seen what happens.
Jack Black is R.L. Stine. Speaking of real, the real R.L. Stine joins us now from New York, author of more than 400 million books, a monster in publishing terms. His Twitter bio reads, "My job? To terrify kids." R.L. Stine, welcome to On Point. Great to have you here.
Hi, Tom. I loved hearing all that. I'm a character. Do you believe it?
Yeah,
I'm a movie character.
Yes, well, we do at last. I mean, you are monstrous in the scale of your output, sir. So if you're in a horror film of sorts, it kind of makes sense. What do you make of Jack Black's portrayal of you?
Very strange to be a movie character. Jack is the evil version of me. Actually, we met in New York. We'd never met. And I think he came to New York just to look at me and try to figure out what he was going to do.
Do you scare little children when you talk to them?
No, I'm not scary at all. I'm this old guy. When I go to schools, kids are horribly disappointed. I don't wear a cape and I don't have fangs, you know. I walk out. But Jack did a good evil version.
What was your advice to him on playing you? I think you two sat down for a minute at some point. He just wanted to see you.
No, we did. We had lunch. And, you know, he said, well, what in the script is true about you? And I said, Jack, nothing. Not a thing. There's nothing of me in the script. It's this strange R.L. Stine character. And he said, well, I'll be a sinister. He actually decided to play me as Orson Welles.
Okay.
That was his choice.
That's sort of power and ominous.
Yeah, I know. So he has this Orson Welles act. I said, Jack, I'm from Ohio. I don't sound like that.
He looks sort of like Drew Carey with those big chunky glasses and Jack Black square face.
They cleaned him up. They made him shave and they gave him short hair and he wears glasses like me. And they made him look a little bit like me.
I've heard you talking now about the books. I've heard you talking about the movie. You come across as so genial, and yet you come up with, I don't know how many hundreds of scary stories at this point. Is there something dark and twisted behind your calm and sweet demeanor?
No, you've talked to other horror guys. Yes. They're all from Ohio. They're all quiet guys, right?
Yeah.
Wes Craven was a quiet Ohio boy. They're no scary
until
guys.
Until the
don't
chainsaw
have to be.
Comes out.
Yeah, scary guys. You know, I never planned to be scary. I never. It's embarrassing. It wasn't even my idea for me to write scary books. It was an editor's idea. I always wanted to be funny, and I wrote about 100 joke books for kids before I got scary. And I did a humor magazine for 10 years called Bananas, and that's what I always wanted to do. I wanted to be funny. Luckily. I think horror is funny. Horror makes me laugh. So I'm kind of still doing the same thing I always have.
I've heard this story. You were sent out, you were sort of ordered up to do a horror book, scary story for kids, Blind Date, I think it was called.
Yeah, it was a horror novel for teenagers called Blind Date.
You dutifully did it, and then it sold like hotcakes.
It was a bestseller. I'd never been on the bestseller list. It was like a number one bestseller. And I thought, wait a minute, forget the funny stuff. I'm going to be scary. And so I've done these scary books ever since.
And you have been scary and with an output on a grand scale. And the output is almost monstrous. That makes me wonder if you've got something, some monster lying in. How do you do that? How have you put out?
Know.
So is it 300 and I don't know how many books?
Yeah,
now?
I've written 300 books. I don't know. But, Isaac Asimov lived in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
And in the days when you had to mail off your manuscripts, I would be in the post office mailing off a manuscript, and Isaac Asimov would be up ahead of me with like three in his arms. Mm. So he wrote 550 books.
What does that take?
So I got a ways to go.
Do you just sort of, do you sort of plug something from your computer right into your forehead and it just gushes out? How on earth do you do
it? Yeah, I'm a factory. No, I don't know. I love it. I've been doing it since I was 9 years old. And I don't know why, who can explain why you like something so much, but I wouldn't know what else to do all day.
Well, it's not that you don't like it, and certainly millions and millions of kids have read Goosebumps and Fear Street and all the rest and just can't get enough of it, but I'm curious at how you sort of open a vein and this gusher of horror stories flow out. What's your technique? How do you do it?
Well, here's my secret. Mm-hmm. I never try to think of ideas. I only think of titles. I'm like backwards from most other authors who get an idea first and then they write, then they think. I always have to start with a title. I don't even try to think of ideas.
You know, of what the story is going to be. So looking here at a list of Goosebumps titles, Cry of the Cat, Bride of the Living Dummy, Fright Camp, Headless Halloween, Brain Juice, Jekyll and Heidi, Scream School, The Mummy Walks, Be Afraid, Be Very Afraid. What, just we give you words and you free associate?
Yeah, and that leads me to a story. It's, I was walking my dog in the park, and these words popped into my head. Little Shop of Hamsters. That's a good title, right?
Well,
I thought,
yes.
What a great, I don't know, where did it come from?
Well,
I don't know.
Well, but, Little Shop of Horrors, and then R.L. Stein gets a hold of it and gives it his treatment. Your
and
treatment.
Then, of course, I have to start thinking, well, how do you make hamsters scary? What do you do? Do you have maybe 1,000 of them, or do you have a giant one? What, and that's the way I think the title leads me to figure out another story.
Do you have a council of horror advisors who sit around and say, hamsters, let's have fangs on the hamsters, let's have blood squirting
know,
from their ears, or is it all you?
No, it's me. I'm actually married to my editor. I mean, for real.
Okay.
Jane is my...
She really
is my editor.
Okay.
Which is a nightmare, let me tell you, to be married to your editor. And her main job is to say, you already did that in number 18.
You've already done that.
You already used that. That's her job. She has the memory. And she has to say, well, I'm sorry, you've already, you know, the challenge for me now, seriously, is to, I've done every story a human can do. So the, it's a more of a, it's gotten harder to think of, you know, a new kind of scare or a new kind of creature or some new situation.
But you do
that's,
I'm
reading
the hard
here, part.
I'm reading here in the LA Times where you've got somebody's dad eaten by... Forgive me,
oh,
listeners.
No, don't give that away.
It's
don't
right here in black away. And white. It's right.
I know, but don't give that away.
I'm
that's
telling
in the new. That's the new Fear Street, The Lost Girl, and it's the most disgusting scene I've ever written. I honestly, Tom, I should be ashamed
eaten
of it.
Eaten by.
No, please, please.
Things you don't think will eat your father.
It's a horrible scene.
Have you no limit? I mean, how old is the ideal reader for this book where the father is
they're
eaten
older.
By,
the Fear Street. No, I wouldn't do that for in a Goosebumps book. The Fear Street book readers are older. They're teenagers.
Giddy up. It's pretty darn creepy. And yet
yeah, it's nasty.
But it just keeps coming. So somehow there is always a new twist out there.
But, you know, to me, it's all funny. Horror makes me laugh. When you go to a horror movie and the shark jumps up and is swallowing somebody, I'm the one in the theater who's laughing.
Does that mean you're a kid at heart?
No, I think there's something missing in my brain because I don't get frightened by movies or by books. People always say to me, oh, after I read your book, I had to leave all the lights on. I couldn't sleep, and I had to lock all my doors. I've never had that feeling. I don't know what that feeling is. And I've read, there's some wonderful, terrifying Stephen King books. I think Pet Sematary is a horrifying book, but I don't have that feeling of being scared.
We'll come back and think about adult horror. Horror for young readers, horror for child readers. R.L. Stine of Goosebumps fame is with us. A generation and more now has grown up reading these books in Fear Street and all the rest. The new big motion picture is up behind us here. The soundtrack of the new Goosebumps movie, composed by Danny Elfman, based on the stories of R.L. Stine. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Goosebumps Fear Street author R.L. Stine about his life in scary books for kids, the new Goosebumps movie, and what makes people, kids, laugh and scream. Behind me, you may recognize the intro music from the Goosebumps television series that ran from 1995 to 98 based on R.L. Stine's book series, Goosebumps. He's with us from New York today, and you can join us as well. What has made Goosebumps so popular? Did he put the spooky stuff right in your own backyard? Have you seen the movie? Does it capture the Goosebumps thing? Did you recognize the monsters from your childhood nightmares or delights? What's your question for R.L. Stine on how he did it, how he keeps doing it? Here's a little scene from the new movie, Goosebumps. Fighting off a pack of gnomes there, Lauren in Atlanta, Georgia. Lauren, you are on the air with R.L. Stine.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, R.L. Stine.
Hi, Laura.
Call me Bob, he says, Lauren.
I was just calling. I was in elementary school in the 90s and grew up with a bunch of my friends loving Goosebumps. My experience with Goosebumps it came from Beneath the Sink, and my second grade teacher would read it to us like 20 minutes a day, and we were all kind of on the edge of our toes, and I am that person who does get scared, so I think I can trace back my need to even cover my eyes of horror movies or show commercials, too, it came from beneath the sink. So thank you so much.
That book is actually about a sponge. They find a sponge under the sink. Who would write a horror novel about a sponge? Can you imagine?
Why did it grip you, Lauren?
I think just at the time that I was so little, and I think that it, for me, it was my first exposure to something scary. And I think that maybe my imagination made it scary as it was a book. I never saw the Goosebumps show when it was on television back then. But, yeah, I mean, the fact that it's kids and it's a sponge and I dealt with, you know, I've cleaned before. And
keep it was simple.
It was a bad luck sponge. If you had the sponge, it brought horrible luck to your house. That was the scary part.
This is not the one you want up on the drying rack or next to the faucet. This is not the sponge to have around, but it was there for you.
It was actually a creature.
Yeah. How do you know where the line is, Bob Arlstein, in your Goosebumps books? I mean, Fear Street, they get a little bloodier, a little more
wicked. I kill off a lot of teenagers, which everyone enjoys, right?
Well, in the Fear Street books you do. Because that's your young adult series. We'll talk about killing off and enjoying killing teenagers. Okay, you say
everyone
so.
Everyone loves that.
Well, I guess because what? Because they're pestering
because
somebody.
Because they're teenagers.
Wow. Okay, maybe Jack Black has got you nailed.
Yeah, yes, right.
What about the younger kids?
No one dies in Goosebumps. And my rule is the kids have to know it's a fantasy. They have to know it couldn't really happen. That's my one rule. And if you let them know that it's all not real and it's all just a story, then you can go pretty far with kids.
Pretty gruesome things happen in real life. How do you weigh whether this couldn't happen or they'll know this is fantasy?
Yeah, well, I try to keep the real world is a scary place for kids these days, I think. So I try to keep as much of the real world out as I can.
Though it's always sort of comfortably set in settings that kids would know very well from their daily lives.
It's usually very suburban, and the stories usually take place like at school or in the kid's backyard or in the kitchen, which I think is much scarier for kids than like setting it in some medieval castle in Europe or something.
Bill in Mount Pulaski, Illinois, you're on the air with R.L. Stein.
Hey, Mr. Stein, and hello, Tom.
Hi.
I just wanted to call because, well, one of the secrets, I think, to the stories is that kids like things that are a little scary and a little naughty, but they don't cross the line. And many moons ago when I was young, my go-to was Roald Dahl. And like in The Fantastic Mr. Fox, where Farmer Bean picks something small and black out of his ear and flicks it away. Kids love that kind of stuff. But more importantly, my third grader had a terrible time reading. She was so far behind. She'd been held back. And she brought home this little book called Night of the Living Dummy and plowed through it. And then plowed through so many of your books. And now she's an A student in English. She's plowed through Lord of the Rings, through Dune.
She's a reader.
Your knack turned her into a reader. And I'm sure you hear this a million times, but I just wanted to say thank you.
I never get tired of hearing it. I love that story. I keep these books very easy to read, and every chapter has a little surprise, a cliffhanger that keeps you going on to the next chapter. And I mean, the whole point of Goosebumps is reading motivation.
Maybe you are the great American educator here, Night of the Living Dummy, but she's off to the races with her reading. Emilio in Oklahoma City, you're on with R.L. Stein.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
Hi, Arl Stein.
Hi.
I was just curious. When I was a kid, I read the Goosebumps books and I watched the TV show. And I was just curious because Slappy was the one that gave me nightmares when I was a kid. I was just curious what your inspiration for coming up with him was.
Slappy, the ventriloquist dummy, those are kind of intrinsically creepy to my mind, even when they're not intended to be. But how about it, Bob?
Yeah, it's true. I have to say, I don't know why people find ventriloquist dummies so scary, but luckily it worked out. I was always, when I was a kid, I was always really fascinated by puppets and dummies. And I had marionettes, and I had, you know, I had a ventriloquist dummy. But I think Slappy, which he's my most popular villain, and he's sort of the star of the Goosebumps movie. Mm-hmm. I saw a film from 1947, I think, a British horror film called Dead of Night, which has three different episodes. And one episode is about a ventriloquist whose dummy has come to life and is just ruining his life and taking over. And that film sort of stayed with me. And I think Slappy kind of came from that film, Dead of Night.
Here's a little bit from the TV version of Goosebumps, 1996, Night of the Living Dummy 2. Amy, played by Maggie Castle, confronts her ventriloquist dummy, Slappy, who's come to life.
Hey, Amy.
Huh?
Guess who?
Keep away from me.
We're partners, Amy, remember? Wasn't very nice of you to dump me in the sewer like that.
What do you want?
Don't you get it yet? You can't get rid of me.
What are you talking about?
Wasn't very nice of you to dump me in the sewer like that. You've got your talking dummy. Enough. Elaine in Stowe, Vermont, you're on, Elaine.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, R.L. Stein.
Hi.
I want to do what I I was terrified.
Oh, Elaine, we're losing you, and I'm sorry for it, saying Night of the Living Dummy terrified her and her brother. Her grandmother had a ventriloquist dummy. Why did you have one as a kid, Bob?
This makes me sound too old, but I loved Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy on the radio when I was really tiny.
Yeah.
And he had a really stupid dummy called Mortimer Snerd. And it was past my bedtime, but my parents would let me come down and listen to Mortimer Snerd. So I even liked dummies on the radio.
Can you imagine? To visualize the dummy.
Yeah. Can you imagine being a ventriloquist on the radio?
No. Did you try to do the whole throw your voice thing? Would you sit with your dummy and try to
yes,
have him talk without
the dummy came with a kit that kind of told you how to throw your voice.
Can you give us a little example of that?
No, not at all. I could never do it.
We won't know.
No.
It's radio.
No. Yeah, you're right. That's true.
Zachary in Augusta, Georgia. You're on with R.L. Stein.
Hi, Tom. Hi, R.L. How are you, Beth?
Okay.
Good.
I think that I think the reason these books resonate so much with young people is because not only do they get us reading, I remember when I was a child, just loving horror and even the grisly stuff, but my favorite thing to do was stay up all night and reading the Goosebumps books because it really keeps you going. And I think partially that's because you're speaking to kids about their problems. There are so many different things going on in these books, from bullying to, you know, sibling rivalry, and I think generally it's just a matter of you're telling honest stories about kids to kids, and that really resonates with them. And it's certainly inspiring for me growing up.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad they were meaningful to you. Yeah, I try to do that. And, of course, the other secret about Goosebumps is that the parents don't count for anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's all kids. The parents are always useless. They never believe the kids. They never believe what's going on. They're never there to help them. The kids always have to do it on their own. People always say, what's the message in Goosebumps? And if there is one, I mean, I don't try to put any messages in the book, except maybe run, but and they're all normal kids, that normal kids can use their wits and their imagination and solve these, you know, horrible problems they're having.
So what do you think about kids? You've stuck with kids all the way through. It's worked for you in a huge way, but were you ever tempted to migrate on up into adult
yeah,
horror?
I have, but I don't. I've written some adult books, but I tell you, no one is calling me to do any more. I'm by the phone. No one's
okay.
I'm waiting by the phone. No one's saying, Bob, could you write another adult book? You know, I love writing for kids.
Yeah.
I have this 7 to 12-year-old audience is the best audience in the world. I get them the last time in their lives they will ever be enthusiastic. When they turn 12, they discover sex. They have to be cool. and you totally lose them. But 7 to 11, they love authors. They want to know everything. They want to read everything. They write to you. They email you. It's just a wonderful audience that adult authors don't, they don't know what that's like.
Has writing for children in some way that I can imagine a book that makes this even creepy kept you young?
It's kept me very old.
Old? Why?
Very old.
Why?
I feel
why?
Older and older. When you see these kids, you know, at a book signing or something, and they seem to get tinier and tinier.
Yeah.
But
they're Peter Pan and you're not.
I'm different from a lot of children's authors. I really like kids. You know, I had a kid. I have a grandson now.
Mm-hmm.
And I really, you know, I enjoy kids. I think kids are really smart and really fun.
So what's the switch that you flip when it comes to your Fear Street series? Now you're writing for those teenagers who don't have that endless enthusiasm, you say, from 7 to 12. And suddenly R.L. Stine's willing to kill them off in droves in the books. What's the perspective shift that you take as an
author?
Well,
then I'm writing straight horror.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. They're just basic horror novels.
Question on Fear Street from Sarah in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Hi, Sarah. You're on with R.L. Stine.
Hi, R.L. Stine. I'm a huge fan. Thank you so much.
Thanks,
for
Sarah.
Well, hi, Tom.
Hi.
My question is, I know that in your books you used a lot of paranormal activity, ghosts, psychics, telekinesis, things of that nature. Do you actually believe in that stuff? Do you have any experience with it, or do you just use it for the sake of your novel?
The paranormal. How about it?
I have no experience with it. I always say I've never seen a ghost, but I keep looking. I keep looking. No, I have no experience with the paranormal or the supernatural. I don't think I believe in it.
You know, there's something about your chuckle that makes us wonder if you're putting us on, if you're actually doing some mind control right now.
I'm not that clever.
I don't know.
No.
What lurks? What lurks beneath?
No. I'm not that devious, really.
Karen in Detroit, you're on with... listen to that chuckle again. Listen, Karen, you're on with R.L. Stine.
Hi, Dom. Hi, Mr. Stine. Hi. I wanted to ask a question because my 8-year-old daughter also delights in your books, especially when in Goosebumps they scare me to death. She just cackles with glee. And one of the things I noticed, it seems like the characters are almost gender neutral. And I don't know if you do that purposefully so that the child who's reading it can put themselves into the story. But my daughter simply enjoys every character and tries to write her own books even after reading what you've written. So I wonder if you try to give those kids that experience of putting themselves inside the story.
That's very smart. That's exactly what I do. I don't, you know, I'm always accused of not having much characterization in my books. I hear that a lot. In fact, one of my editors had a great line. She said, Bob, you write great cardboard We write perfect cardboard characters.
Oh, what a compliment.
So, yeah, nice compliment, right?
Yeah.
But I think the books are scarier if the reader can picture herself or himself as the protagonist. And I think it makes it all closer for the kid and just makes it scarier. So I don't do a lot of characterization so that the reader, just as she said, can imagine having this adventure.
Karen reads your books as gender neutral in that way. There's been some criticism out there that in the movie where they give you a daughter, Hannah Stine, that this character is, the Atlantic says, thinly written, uncomplicated, destined to serve only as a love interest to the main hero. Is the movie betraying your gender neutrality?
They were the only ones who said that.
Okay.
I don't agree with it. And I haven't seen it. And no one else mentioned that. And I think she's Hannah's very strong character. She certainly leads the Dylan Minnette character around.
Mm-hmm.
And she's the leader. He's scared. And she takes him into the woods. And she's the brave one. So I don't really understand that comment.
In the new Goosebumps movie.
I'm defending the movie here.
All right. R.L. Stine sticks up for the movie. He has written more than 300 books, many of them, of course, kind of funny and scary for kids, the Goosebumps series, a little scarier for teens, Fear Street, that series. Behind us right here, They're Here by Danny Elfman from the soundtrack of the new Goosebumps movie. R.L. Stine, please stand by in New York. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with Goosebumps Fear Street author R.L. Stein. Goosebumps, of course, huge. He's written hundreds of books, more than 300 now, more than 400 million in print, and the big Goosebumps movie in theaters right now. He may have been the nighttime reading go-to of your young reading life. You can join us. How do you fire up young imaginations for Halloween in your house? And what do you love in the work of R.L. Stein, if it's been on your bookshelf? Well, what makes it so effective for young minds? Here's another little bit from Revenge of the Lawn Gnomes. This is the TV version, 1996. Two lawn gnomes come alive at night and, among other things, attack little children.
I know. We can quit them like bugs. That's what I said.
Why are you doing this?
Don't you know anything about gnomes? It's what we do. It's in our nature. We make mischief. Anywhere, anytime, and to anyone. Like you.
R.L. Stein joins us from New York. You can find an excerpt, by the way, of one of the newest Goosebumps books, Trick or Trap, at our website, onpointradio.org. So many callers for you, Bob. Dan in Canton, Ohio. Dan, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Bob.
Hiya, Dan.
Mr. Stein, I just wanted to thank you so much. I was actually introduced to Goosebumps through the television show, and I remember laughing and just enjoying it so much, and that sparked an interest for the books, which then sparked a lifelong love of literature and reading and all of that. So I wanted to thank you for essentially my entire childhood. Thank you so much.
How nice. Thank you.
No, it's unbelievable. I'm just pleased as punch to be able to talk to you. I do want to ask, what helped you make that transition from horror to comedy? You said it wasn't, I'm sorry, comedy to horror.
Mm-hmm.
You said it wasn't your idea and that it was someone else's idea for you to start writing scary books. And I want to know what kind of research went into that.
Well, I ran right to the bookstore. I had to write this book, and I didn't really know what she was talking about. And I bought all these books by other young adult horror writers, Christopher Pike and Lois Duncan, and there were a few others at the time. I think Richie Tankersley Cusick. And I bought their books and read them so I could figure out what I was supposed to do, what my assignment was to write this novel. And then I tried to figure out what I could do a little bit differently from the other authors. And my decision was to make them simpler, to make them easier to read, and to put humor in them. And that's really how I got started.
Did the publishers always go for your comedy thread, your humor thread? Did they see what you were
up
to?
Yeah, they were very – well, once Blind Date came out and it was a number one bestseller.
Yeah, enough said.
They were very, very agreeable.
I'm sure they were. Were you ever tempted to slide back to the comedy? Do you have a sort of laugh-o-meter you hold up to your book? So
I do comedy shows here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
I host improv shows.
Yes.
And my wife says, why? Why do you do that? I do these comedy shows. I said, well, it's something to fall back on in case the writing doesn't work out.
I'm looking at 1 year in the 1990s where you made over $40 million. I don't think
falling
back.
No, that's a lie.
That's a lie?
That's a lie. No, Forbes didn't. That's ridiculous.
Okay.
No, I didn't. No. I hate that Forbes list. It's totally wrong.
That's so weird. 400 million books, though, that's not peanuts.
But they're children's books.
Yes, true.
I don't get $28 a book.
That's true. That's true.
I hate people counting my money. I hate Forbes.
R.L. Stein says, back off, Forbes. Mike, or we'll write a book about you. Mike in Staten, Virginia. Mike, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bob. First of all, big fan of the show, big fan of the books. I was also another one of your 90s children's success stories.
Good.
And
we like 90s kids.
Yeah. Currently, I'm a freelance graphic designer and also amateur graphic artist. And my question is, have you ever been approached to do any of these in a comic book or graphic art format? Because I can remember as a kid, the two things I was always waiting for was the next R.L. Stine book and the next Batman comic. So I'm wondering if you were...
Well, that's
ever,
nice. Yeah, no, they've done... Scholastic has published a graphic novel, and I think it has four different Goosebumps books in it. I can't remember what it's called. It might just be Goosebumps the Graphic Novel, and it's got a big head of Slappy on the cover. And it just came out, I think, last month. So they've done a graphic novel.
Does that interest you as a form, or that's somebody else's business? You write the book, and they can do what they will.
Well, I didn't have anything to do with it, but, you know, I really wanted to be a cartoonist. I really wanted to draw comic books.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was a kid, and I had this character called Super Stooge, who was a real dumb superhero, and I drew all these comics, and I brought them into school, and the kids all said, "You stink. You're terrible. You can't draw." And they were right. I couldn't draw anything. I couldn't draw, so I had to write. But comic books have always been really interesting to me, and, you know.
So, Mike, there's one out there, and it sounds like an openness to more. I think we've got more on the graphic front here. Abdul is calling. Bowling Green, Kentucky. Abdul, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hi, Mr. Stine. I just wanted to say thanks for the great work that you do. And I wanted to make a comment. I'm in my 30s, and I remember back in the 90s seeing your books in the school library, and I was always scared to pick up a book and read it because of the cover design. And my 9-year-old son loves your books, and I wanted to ask, what enticed you to create the cover for your Goosebump books? Thank you.
I mean, they're very bright. They're almost neon colors and always sort of, funnily, humorously grotesque figures. How about it?
And scarier than the books, I think. I think the covers are scarier than the books.
I've got a giant praying mantis here coming down on me and a killer poodle. And I don't know what this is. The Abominable Snowman of Pasadena.
Well, this wonderful guy, Tim Jacobus, did the first 62 cover paintings.
Wow.
He did 62 paintings in a row, and he was wonderful. Just a fabulous job. And the covers, I think, are partly responsible, of course, for the success of the books. But I always thought they were scarier than what was inside.
Do you or your wife have a tattoo of any of these cover paintings on your bodies?
No, but this is a generational thing, but I am alarmed by how many people on Twitter show me their Goosebumps tattoos.
Really? What have you seen? And what monsters?
They have one woman had an entire sleeve with Slappy and a ghost and the Goosebumps logo on her arm. And people, I guess I should be honored. But, you know, being an older person, I'm appalled. And this is true, Tom. A young woman came up to me at a book signing.
Yeah.
And she was covered in hideous tattoos. She had a serpent on her arm, and she had a dragon, and just covered in really ugly tattoos. And she shook hands with me, and she said, "You're the biggest influence on my life."
You have a lot of nerve, horror story writer, calling these tattoos hideous. I mean, you gave her visions.
I know. That's horror. That's appalling. I don't know. But, you know, people get the big Goosebumps G on their arms, and they send me photos of their Goosebumps tattoos.
It's all you.
Amazing.
It's all you, Bob. This is you made this world. Now we live in it. Let's get a professor of psychology in here. Robin in Waverly, Tennessee. Robin, it tells me you're a professor of psychology. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay. Give us a question and then explain Goosebumps tattoos to us.
Yes, I teach human development, so I have lots of questions from students who are parents. And one student's daughter was having night terrors, nightmares, both. And I suggested to her, I said, why don't you read her something like Goosebumps, where she can be a participant an observer of scary things that's kind of less terrifying, but still scary, and get that emotion out before bedtime. And she can be an observer versus a participant. And the parent came back and said it worked. She's not having them anymore.
So reading horror stories, though, for kids, actually helped kids sometimes get over their horrors?
It helped in this case. I said, get it out with you there and discussing the stories and reading it out loud. And she got it out of her system, per se,
and
she didn't have night terrors.
What do you say, Bob?
And they all have happy endings. So,
yeah. And she got to watch the story instead of being in the story.
Right.
I mean, it's Robin, thank you for your call. You know, in some ways you have an unfair advantage. I think we all remember that time of life, and it's sort of in the window you write for, where the imagination is so vivid, children can work themselves into real fear. I used to remember as a little kid being scared of a shadow thrown by a half-open closet door that looked like a shark's fin to me. And that stupid triangular shadow would scare the daylights out of me night after night. You've got an audience that's all primed for whatever.
Well,
you know,
Tom, I was a very fearful child.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's one reason I stayed in my room typing all the time. But I was afraid of all kinds of things. I was afraid. We had this big freezer in the basement, kind of a creepy basement. We kept meat in it.
Whoa,
down. And my dad would say, go down and bring up a roast. Go downstairs. And
no,
I would
dad,
go
no.
down into the basement. And this freezer was sort of shaped like a coffin.
Oh.
It was like a long rectangular box. And I would have to lift the lid up, lift. And I always knew there would be like a dead body inside, frozen. I knew it. But, you know, and it's not a good way to go through childhood being so scared all the time, but it turned out to be lucky when I wrote these books.
Have you
because
used...
I could remember that feeling, that horrible feeling of panic, and I could, like, bring it to the books.
Almost an unfair advantage in starting out to write because you knew. Steffi in Sterling Heights, Michigan. Steffi, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
I am beyond honored to be on the phone with you guys right now. I'm so excited. This has made my life.
Thank you.
Well, I grew up stealing Goosebumps books from my older brother. He never knew where they went, so sorry, brother. But those are the only books that I read. I never put them down after I picked them up. But my question to you, sir, is of all the crazy, wonderful monsters you've created, which one is your favorite?
Well, I have a couple favorites, but I think my favorite book, I think, of all of them is The Haunted Mask, the Halloween story about Carly Beth, who puts on this mask and it sticks to her face and she can't get it off and it changes her personality and it turns her evil. And I always liked the TV version of that, and I'm very proud of that book. I think it's a really good Halloween story. And it's the only book I ever wrote based on something real. It's the only one that came from real life. When my son, Matt, was real little, it was Halloween time, and he was trying on a green rubber Frankenstein mask.
Mm.
And he pulled it down over his head, and he couldn't get it off. I was watching from the doorway, and he tugged and he tugged, and he couldn't get the mask off. And I thought, what a great idea for a story. I should have helped him, right?
Sure. Instead,
I didn't
you're taking
win the
notes.
Good. Yeah. I said, oh, great idea for a story. I left him there so I could write down this thing. I didn't win the Good Parent Award that day, but that's where that book came from.
What was it about how that book turned out that made you the most proud of it? Was there some insight that you explored there? Or
I just think it's kind of a perfect horror story. And all the masks are very creepy and what happens to her and the fact that it's tightening around her face, it's right on her head. And then there's a very simple solution to it that works really nicely.
And what about – I mean, there's a mask, but what about your monsters, our caller asks.
Yeah, I don't know. There's a book called Welcome to Camp Jelly Jam, which has an enormous sort of Jabba the Hutt type monster who smells horrible. This is my smelliest book. I love him. He smells so bad that the campers in this camp have to bathe him 24 hours a day to get the smell off. And at one point, I'll spoil the book, they stop bathing him, and he dies from his own odor.
That's pretty nasty. That's pretty nasty. And we call that a happy ending.
I'm proud of that, yes.
Do you ever hang it up, or do you write these until you can't write them anymore?
No one used to ask me that question 10 years ago.
Well, that's what happens.
Now, all of a sudden, people are asking me, are you going to retire? Wait a minute. Why is that happening now? Do writers retire? I think you drop dead on your keyboard, don't you?
You've got to tell us. You're the guy who's written 330 of them. It's not just that. It's part of the enthusiasm for the undertaking, too, and whether you want to keep doing it.
Well, yeah. What else would I do? I don't know. I'll keep going. As long as people like them.
Do trick-or-treaters come to your door, R.L. Stein?
Well, it's weird in New York, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Because they come down the back stairs, but they're just kids in the building. And we always give away, I have a skeleton I drag out, and we give away candy and books.
Just to hear you say, they come down the back stairs. It gives me a little shiver. The new movie is Goosebumps. The books, they are there in their hundreds, ready to invade your child's shelf. R.L. Stein, it's been such a pleasure talking with you and having you talk with our listeners today. Thank you very much for spending the time with us.
Thank you, Tom. Have a scary Halloween.
Oh, we will. We will. R.L. Stein of Goosebumps fame with us today from New York City. Jack Black out playing him in Goosebumps, the movie. Thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.